This is the Church Planting Podcast, brought to you by the Broadcast Network. Broadcast exists to support, train and encourage church planters. For more information about who we are or about the training that we offer, please visit our website at www.thebroadcastnetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to the Broadcast Podcast. My name is Tom and I'm here with Tim. We're both at Christchurch Manchester and we're also part of the team who runs Broadcast. And we're doing a series at the moment on the podcast about the cultures of Christchurch Manchester. We don't see these only as cultures of our church, but we see them as things that have enabled us to operate as we have, to pioneer, to plant new sites, and as really kind of helpful things to think about for anyone who's got the heart to do the same kind of thing. And there are seven different cultures that we have, and we're recording a little conversation about each of them. And today, the one we're talking about is what we call the Think the Best culture. So Tim, tell us about the Think the Best culture and what we mean when we say that.
I think really it is an antidote to the British tendency for cynicism. I think it is, how do we... So we've talked about have a go culture previously. And I think if you have that kind of desire to step out in faith, see God move... do stuff in your town or city which is going to grow the church or serve the poor or whatever it might be. I think if you do that, you need a culture that is highly encouraging and supportive, and allows for people to make mistakes, but also allows for people to be a bit obnoxious, allows for people to perhaps not know what they're doing and get moving. And so I think it is it's a default attitude. I'm going to assume that your intentions are good, mm-hmm. and that you are going to do well. That's my, yeah. And I think recently we've realized that, and that responsibility is yours, not mine. Mm. So if somebody, we want somebody to do something, or we want to get them involved in serving, or want to recruit them into something, it's very easy to get in the conversational loop of, oh, they've got all this going on in their life, they can't do it. Which it may and often is true, mm-hmm. but the Think the Best says, okay, well, you are a good and capable human, mm-hmm. you can make your own decisions on these things. And it's not our job to shield and protect you and create a safety for you. It's mm-hmm. our job to help you grow in faith and go on adventures with Jesus. So I think the Think the Best thing is kind of helping us with our heart attitude to be in how we are with people and treat mm-hmm. people. Do you think I've missed anything on that?
No, I think you've got the stuff there. I think for me, like the sort of influences that I had before I came here, the podcasts I listened to, the preachers that I would listen to, would be quick to highlight what was wrong with people.
Yes.
So, of course, we should be talking about sin. We want to be holy. We want to be following Jesus wholeheartedly, living for him with all that we are. But it's easy to look at a person who they've got great things happening here and here in their life, and they're struggling in this area, and for all eyes to go to the area that they're struggling on. It's like when you come home from school and you got 9 out of 10 on a test, and the question is, oh, what did you get wrong? And instantly eyes are on that. And when we do that, it dehumanizes, really. It misses the image of God in people. It puts people in a box where, well, we're never going to ask that person to serve because they've got this thing they're still wrestling with. It counts people out of the mission. It sets a culture as well where we're seeing the worst in one another, which isn't what Jesus did. It's not at all what he did. He'd see people with all sorts of struggles and mess in their life, and yet, but that's amazing faith that you've got, and see these nuggets of gold within.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So when it comes to then how this shapes us as a church, like, for you, when you think about a person who you might want to bring through as a leader, what difference does it make for that journey that you're seeing the best in them?
I think we would always hope that the group of people we would look at as potential would be large, because we're working hard not to rule people out for things. So I think it gives us a larger pool of people that could do stuff. Yeah. I think it's a larger pool of people that can take the first step. So I think it's easy to perhaps rule people out on whether they are in good enough after a few years development. Mm-hmm. To look at someone now and think, oh, they can't do what would take a number of years to get to anyway. Yes. So I think they're good enough to take the first step. And mm-hmm. I think that kind of, we often talk about how we view success and really wanting to celebrate success as quick as we can. And I guess that's true with people as well. Like the win that they could have to make that sooner, like as easy as it is possible for someone to win, which you would do with your own kids, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
You would celebrate even the small victories because you would hope that positive reinforcement works over, you know, critiquing everything else that's going wrong. Mm. So I think for us, it would increase the pool of leaders. I think there's something, and Colin Barron would always talk about this, how often in a leadership meeting, you can decide on someone because of maybe stuff going on in their life or attitudes they've got or whatever. And then that opinion can be fixed for a long time. Mm. But it, like you said, it was only actually a snapshot of one part of their life or even a bad week that they were having. And that opinion can be set and then we move on to other people. So that it's quite easy to kind of be quite dismissive. Oh, they've got this going on in life, so they can't do it. Mm-hmm. Which is always they're my least favourite conversations because it's always a little bit like, well, surely they have some agency in this themselves to be able to a point to be able to make those decisions for them and also to make the wrong decision on that stuff as well. I think we can look at someone and think it would be good for them to spend more time with their family or to do this and this and actually refuse to give them any opportunity. Yeah. And we may be right, but actually it's up to them to make that stuff. So I think I think it makes us slightly freer and easier in who we talk to.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, like many things, we can talk into what this is and we don't necessarily talk about the other side of it. I do think we're pastoral and caring, and if we saw someone was going under, we wouldn't be dumping more and more on. We'd be wanting to help and talk to them and see life to be healthy. That's not it's not quite what we're saying, but but there can be a tendency to be so overprotective that really comes from underestimating people's capacity and heart and ability.
And often people need a strategic pathway through whatever they're in, not protection.
Yes.
And kind of covering and like wrapping up and coddling, I suppose. I think people generally, I mean, in my own life, I know that I've learnt most and grown most when you're up against it. And when you are, you know, things are coming at you and you're having to learn and you're having to grow and you're having to admit your mistakes and learn what you're not good at and what you are good at. And so I think the best allows people the opportunity to go through that. And not always feel like there's this pastoral hit squad who are here to make your life easier again. I don't think that's what we should be doing at all.
I think even like on the stuff that is not right in someone's life, when you've got to think the best culture, you set a condition where people can hear it. Like, I think about for myself when I've been challenged about different things. If I've been challenged by people who I know are on my side, who like me, who are friends with me, and who see good stuff and want to see more good stuff in me, then it goes in.
Yes.
If I feel like the person talking to me doesn't like me, sees me as a problem to solve and just a bit annoying and they're trying to fix me, then barriers go up. I don't want to have that conversation. I just want to be out of the room.
Yes.
And that's the thing, the best culture. It's not saying everything about you is totally perfect and, you know, there's no flaws, there's nothing to work through. But it is saying, fundamentally, I like you, I see Jesus in you, I see the image of God made through you. Come on this journey with me.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, I mean, there was a point years and years ago when I would be sat with Colin. I think we were probably the only two on staff. And Colin would say to me, Tim, I actually can't do this without you. So he was the main leader. I think we would have been at two or three services then. He would say, I can't do this without you. If this is going to go, I need you for this, Tim. And which you're like, £1 million, brilliant. And then knowing within days, there would be a very different conversation of Tim, why we need to get into, why do you do this? What? And dealing with actually deeper stuff or attitudes or whatever. But because you've got both of those tracks, so there's hope, there's future, there's way forwards, and there's kind of correction as well. I think that is a, I think the best isn't ignore the worst. It's not naivety. But it has to be hopeful for people.
I've been thinking about it recently in terms of who is it easiest to think the best about. And I've realised it's easiest to think the best about myself. Because I know the reasons I do what I do. I've got the narrative. Like, other people might only see, okay, Tom said that thing, but I'll know why I said that thing. I'll know, okay, well, these things have happened, for good or for bad, that's led me there. So I tend to be quite sympathetic with me. And then that moves on to being equally sympathetic to people who are most like me. So if someone's had similar life experience, they present themselves in the world in a similar way to how I do, then it's okay, I get the reasons. I can see if I was in your shoes, I'd be thinking what you're thinking. I totally get why you're being like you are. I can think the best of you. It's harder when people are less like me. So maybe someone from a different culture, different socioeconomic background, different generation even. So why are you doing that? I don't get it. I don't have the steps that build me to see it. And I've really been challenged on this. Like, that when someone comes at something totally different to how I would, that my first thought shouldn't be, right, I just need to explain some stuff to you because you're obviously missing some things that I know. But to actually, you probably know some stuff here that I don't, right? I want to hear it. I want to get to the bottom because I bet there's gold in this if I can understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things of the madness of the COVID years and all of the different kind of great social movements that happened then, like Black Lives Matter or Me Too, was the realisation that people who are experiencing things in life which are way beyond my comprehension and have a view of the world which is entirely beyond my comprehension and have come from cultural backgrounds. And so I think that actually we do need to sit and learn is I think that is a great challenge for us. I mean, even thinking about, well, we talked about have a go and think the best, how someone, so in a city like Manchester, we have numbers of people come from different continents and they move here kind of as adults and fully formed by their culture and have to live in ours. And so their approach to leadership, finances, what community life looks like, you know, how they relate to leaders, all sorts of things is very, very different to kind of a white middle class Brit. So that, I mean, even in that we had situations where members of staff would go off sick and white British culture would be like, oh, I understand what that means in this culture. I understand that if you're off sick, we give you space. And which all of us were like, yeah, of course. And whereas other cultures would be like, where have they gone? I don't understand. We need to get round them and help them and serve them. And their total disconnects in culture. And so even, and it would be quite easy to go, oh, they just don't understand us. This is ridiculous. But there's a real learning so we can not just think the best of them, but understand what their processes are and what they are looking for. And so it actually is quite complex for us. I mean, you guys, you and Rosie are doing a whole kind of process of learning from the different ethnicities that are in CCM because of that. So, and for me, that feels like this is going to help us to think the best of them and to bring them through and actually to be able to lay the pathways for them that work for their culture. Feels quite important, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And one of the things that's been striking about some of these conversations that we've been having is it isn't only that we are learning to think the best as white British people of people of other cultures, But part of the conversation is that we're all learning to think the best of one another.
Yes.
And that the adaptation and the putting one another first, which is in the Bible, is something that goes both ways. And an understanding that people will make mistakes on this stuff. People will say something and mean really well and end up crossing a cultural taboo or saying something that comes across insensitive somewhere else. And actually for us all to have the charity to say, you know, I might have a chat with you about how that landed in my culture, but I'm not going to assume that you were trying to cause problems. I'm not going to assume that you were out to be offensive.
Yes.
And so let's together, let's talk, let's learn, let's grow with one another.
Very good. And I was thinking we've done a bit of a journey in terms of bringing through women to the most senior level of leadership in our church. And I think that has been I start to think it's even been a challenge, but actually I think for all of us learning in meetings, the way that we talk about things comes across in different ways for different people. Yeah. And it's not even all the women perceive it in this way and all the blokes perceive it in that way. That would be ridiculous. But actually the dynamics all shift and it requires exercising. Okay. I am going to assume that you intended well here, but let's talk about, you know, the impact of that and why that feels in that way. It's always looking to build a pathway forward as opposed to sit in the pastoral funk of it, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. I was down at the Catalyst Leaders Day a couple of weeks ago, and there's a seminar that PJ from King's Arms did all about that kind of thing, so teams and like, so that psychological safety was the title of it. Yeah. It was really helpful. Like, he talked about you know, safety and adventure as like the two pillars, and if you don't have this sense of adventure and we're going after some stuff, then you just get into a bit of a kind of, well, what's the point of being here? And you stagnate.
Yeah.
But then if you don't feel safe around the people who you're doing it with, then you freeze up and you can't bring the best of yourself to it.
Yes.
But if you're in a team that's going after some stuff,
yes,
and yet you can think the best of one another, you can be charitable with one another and create a space to draw out the really good stuff that everyone's got to offer, then you can go for it.
Yes.
I found that really good.
It is interesting as well. And when you think about it, I guess we're, because often a habit to do is if you feel uncomfortable, insecure, we tend to project it onto, it's because this other person is doing that, which is kind of a bit of a way of avoiding responsibility for dealing with it yourself, isn't it? I mean, I absolutely know that I've done that in the past, and I've been in leadership team meetings where, you know, somebody would say, well, we're going to do this in church, but I know there's some people in the church, and they're never named, feel this about it. And you'd be like, well, who is that? And they say, well, it's not fair to say. And you know that actually they're just projecting their own insecurities, but can't. And so in that, okay, we need to think the best means you do end up kind of thinking, well, why do I feel, if I'm assuming that your intentions are good, which is a good place to start, why do I feel the way I do about this? And actually looking to do the work. Now, sometimes people's intentions are poor, right? They just, you know, we're humans, aren't we? Yeah. But only as much as mine ever are. So I think that there is a kind of, it does, I found it for me, it does force a reflection. Okay, if he really just wants to do well and wants me to help him do well, then why do I feel the way that I do? Is it because I would rather I did well and he supported me? Is this, what is my ego meaning that I actually need to be top dog here? That there is some sin there for sure. So is a fascinating idea, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I think like the final piece of thinking the best that, it's worth mentioning because it's kind of the, well, maybe the shadow side of it. Like, we've got a colleague who often talks in that kind of language about like the cultures, but think the best doesn't mean like naivety. It doesn't mean being blind to situations where there's real problematic stuff happening. Which, I mean, in any church, you get situations that you look at, you think, actually, this is pretty serious. This needs dealing with in a serious way. Think the best doesn't mean you ignore that stuff, does it?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I've heard people talk about a bias to optimism and how that allows, you know, difficult people, perhaps even dangerous people, to have a freer rein to be difficult than they would. And I think there's truth in that. I think we live in that world for sure. I guess we always kind of come back to the sense of relationship and teachability.
Yes.
And that actually it's not, I have no contact. Well, I have little contact with you. We're not in each other's life much. I assume you're brilliant. And be surprised when everything goes wrong. I think we tend to walk alongside each other a lot more closely, and kind of do a lot more talking about the different things that people do. At least we attempt to. You never get everything right, do you? But we attempt to do that, which means I think the Think the Best thing can live in a bit more realism and hope, as opposed to just it's lazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think if we start with I'm going to assume good things, I'm not saying that assumption must always be true, although there are good things in everyone, so there is truth to it. But what it's saying is I'm not going to jump on the first little potential sign of something could be wrong and say, okay, that must be so. So, okay, that's a thing. Like, log it, be aware of it. If you see a pattern start to develop, if you see more evidence build up, then, there may be a need to get involved. But it's about slowness and charity and being ready to give a hearing and to be fair and just in the way we hear these things, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And I think there's a big faith element to this. Because in reality, there are some people that you just really have faith for and others that you don't. And then perhaps allowing other people to have faith for that person. So, I mean, I remember when there was a site leader we had when I was, I think we were at three sites maybe, and I had no faith for them at all. I just didn't. But Colin really did. Had loads of faith for him, and actually was right. They did really well, and I was wrong. And at one point, I remember them saying to me, "Tim, it feels like you're just waiting for us to make a mistake, and then you come to us very quickly." And I remember going to Colin saying, "Oh, they said this," and Colin's like, "Well, that's because that's what you do, Tim." I was like, "Oh, flipping it." So, and realizing actually, the only thing I could do to think the best of them was to get right out their way, and to allow somebody else to have faith for them and trust into how that would work out. And I think that sometimes you just have to own up to the fact, I just can't lie about this. But if other people have faith, then let's just allow it to play. And that gives me time to catch up. If I'm proved wrong, then okay, faith grows. And I see that you're right and this is a good thing and I'm not going to hold on to it as a point of honour. I think there's more of us now that can do that because maturity comes. But I think back in the day, it would have been Colin had big faith for numbers of people. And the rest of us were much younger and a bit more competitive. And I think that just changes as you grow a bit. So all of these cultures, whenever I talk to other churches about this, I say, look, this is 15 years in for us. And all of them take work and effort all the time, forever. So the Think the Best one is probably one of the ones we come back to most. And the one that we're, especially for new people that join, that's probably the one we're keenest for them to catch up to quickest, I would think. Because it feels like it is the heart that underpins a lot of the others. Do you think that would be fair?
I think you're right, I mean, we're talking about the second chance culture. But you give people a second chance because you've got this Think the Best read on their assumptions, their motives, their heart behind it. Have a go. We'll be quick to let people have a go because we see this good in them that's there emerging to get out. So, I think you're right. It's very foundational, isn't it?
Yeah, very good.
Great. Well, thanks for chatting with me today, Tim. We'll be back soon with the next of the cultures.